From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Thursday, April 30th, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel.
You will get further direction. It will not be at this moment and not at this time. The meeting is adjourned.
That's how Tuesday's Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools Board of Education meeting ended, as board members voted 8-1 to reject Superintendent Crystal Hill's proposed $2.1 billion budget. Now the school board plans to meet Saturday morning at 8 for a budget workshop. Tuesday's vote came with few details about why the budget was rejected or what needed to be addressed. Saturday's meeting will be in room 267 of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Government Center and is open to the public. Superintendent Crystal Hill presented her official recommendation to overhaul the district's magnet programs, but some board members expressed concerns that could delay the proposal a year. James Farrell has more.
CMS has spent the past several weeks conducting 126 community engagement sessions. The feedback from those sessions, held at all the district's high schools, led Hill to tweak her proposal, which would reduce the number of magnet themes from 16 to 6. But some board members were concerned that officials didn't collect demographic or location information about those who attended those sessions. Here's Board Chair Stephanie Sneed.
I'm real concerned about this, because that means we don't have any measure of where we may be deficient in reaching people. I'm concerned about it.
Hill said she understood the board's trepidation and said the district could pause and do more community engagement, but doing so would push any changes back a year to the 2028-29 school year. RTI, the firm helping CMS with community engagement, said it would develop a data report. The board signaled it would review that report before making a decision. James Farrell, WFAE News.
Duke Energy Carolinas has requested permission from state regulators for steep rate hikes beginning in 2027. Zachary Turner attended last night's public hearing in Charlotte.
The rate hikes would raise the average monthly Duke Energy Carolinas bill by more than $17 in 2027 and $6 in 2028. Last night, about 40 protesters gathered outside the Mecklenburg County Courthouse before the public hearing. Charlotte resident Martha Ziwa came because she said her energy bills have increased since moving to Charlotte last summer.
It's just the stress of thinking that you have planned your monthly expenses out perfectly, and then all of a sudden you see that there's another charge that you have to pay.
Duke Energy Carolina's annual revenue would increase by $1 billion if approved. The utility says the hike would pay for grid and power plant upgrades. The North Carolina Utilities Commission forbade recording during the public hearing. Duke Energy Carolina's customers can still comment on the proposal online at ncuc.gov. Zachary Turner, WFAE News.
A state Senate committee voted Wednesday morning to ban kids under age 14 from using social media. Lawmakers say apps like Facebook and Instagram can have harmful effects on young people. The bill would also require social media users who are age 14 or 15 to get a parent's consent to create an account. Senator Jay Choudhury of Raleigh says the regulation would help schools.
I just think that this legislation is so important because we see teachers competing for children's attention with the algorithms, right? And that includes my own children.
A lobbyist for Meta says the company supports the bill and can implement age verification. A North Carolina Senate committee has signed off on a bill that keeps property reappraisals from going into effect in a dozen counties across the state. Senator Steve Jarvis, a Davidson County Republican, introduced the bill Wednesday.
It gives us time and a pause to be able to go into detail and get something done that we need to get done in property tax and not make a hasty decision that we will regret later.
The pause on reappraisals would impact a dozen counties across North Carolina, including Buncombe, Guilford, and Pender counties. It's one of a number of proposals dealing with property taxes moving through the General Assembly. The House is also considering a bill that would put a constitutional amendment in front of voters this fall, capping local government's increases in property tax revenue. In Gaston County, voters could soon get a say in how much extra their teachers are paid. WJZY reports county commissioners may put a quarter-cent sales tax on the November ballot to fund teacher supplements. It would be applied to any purchase that typically has a sales tax. Commissioners say it's the best way to make sure Gaston County schools recruit and retain quality teachers. Commission Vice Chair Bob Hovis is asking the North Carolina General Assembly to repurpose a transportation sales tax the county never implemented and turn it into an educational sales tax. Charlotte's logistics sector continues to grow with a major expansion plan near the airport. Kenneth Lee has more.
Averitt says it plans to build a new regional campus on Shopton Road near Charlotte Douglas International Airport. The Tennessee-based company expects to add more than 200 jobs over the next 4 years, with average salaries just over $81,000. Total investment could exceed $200 million and will bring all of Averitt's local operations into one location. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyle says the investment reflects the city's growing role as a logistics hub. The campus is expected to open in 2028. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
North Carolina lawmakers have introduced a bill that would create a $50 million loan fund to boost affordable housing across the state. From Raleigh, Adam Wagner has the details.
The bipartisan bill is meant to help nonprofit affordable housing developers like Habitat for Humanity with pre-construction work. The fund would support activities like buying land, securing permits, and installing infrastructure. Those costs can add up to about $50,000 per house. House Minority Leader Robert Reeves, a Chatham County Democrat, is one of the bill's primary sponsors. He says it helps prevent what developers call the, quote, valley of death.
Those calls come in early. They come before a project has an opportunity to generate any revenue or do anything. And for nonprofit affordable housing builders, especially those working with limited margins and mission-driven models, those upfront costs can stop a good project before it ever gets off the ground.
Habitat for Humanity officials say the fund could help build up to 1,000 new homes over the next 5 years. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capital Bureau.
The North Carolina Department of Public Instruction held a press conference Wednesday to discuss state testing security ahead of spring, end-of-grade, and end-of-course testing. NCDPI said there are more than 2 million such tests issued across the state, and officials say they need more proctors for this year's testing period. State Superintendent Mo Green explained how a person can sign up.
Be in communication with the public school unit, being either the district or the charter school, and they may either handle it at that level. Certainly for districts, they may actually suggest that you reach out to particular schools where the need is present.
End of year grade and course tests will be held in the final 5 to 10 days of the instructional year. A May Day march focusing on workers and immigrant rights is planned for Friday in East Charlotte. Julian Berger reports.
The International Workers' Day march steps off at 5:30 p.m. along Central Avenue. Local unions and nonprofit organizations, such as the Charlotte Metrolina Labor Council and Action NC, organized the event. Daniela Andrade with Carolina Migrant Network says people are increasingly concerned about how state and national policies are impacting their daily lives.
There's so much at stake for communities, and a lot of people are really coming out and expressing how confusing and also frustrating it is.
The event will end with food, music, and opportunities to connect with local groups working in the community. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
The Carolina Panthers have exercised the fifth-year option on quarterback Bryce Young's rookie contract, which will keep him with the team through 2027. The former first overall draft pick helped lead the Panthers to their first playoff appearance in a decade. As we reported, the CMS Board of Education rejected Superintendent Crystal Hill's proposed budget Tuesday night in a surprise 8-1 vote. They've instructed Hill to amend the budget by May 12th. James Farrell was at this tense meeting and spoke to our Nick Della Canal about what happened and what it all means.
How surprising was this move?
Yeah, so it was very surprising. It's really rare for a school board to outright reject a superintendent's budget proposal. And in fact, I couldn't tell you the last time this has happened in CMS. Hill seemed blindsided and hinted at that when she asked for the board to reread the motion, saying it was the first time she had heard it. Board members have had routine questions about the budget in recent months, but there was no obvious signs they were leaning toward rejecting it.
Well, did the board offer any explanation for why they voted this way?
Not really. It was all very vague. Some hinted they had unanswered questions. Others spoke about needing more time to make sure the budget aligns with district values. Specifically, they referenced closing achievement gaps, student mental health, and resources for teachers. But no one really cited specific line items. They didn't say they wanted more teacher pay or spending on a specific program. Here's Board Chair Stephanie Sneed speaking after the meeting.
There are multiple areas in our budget that would address those areas. It is not necessarily a particular line item theme, but those are the major themes, and those are the major themes that we've heard from community members.
Board member Liz Monterey Duval offered maybe the most specific criticism. She questioned the value of the district's $2.4 million investment in Capturing Kids' Hearts. This is a program that purports to improve school culture. Board member Shamaya Haynes had previously raised similar questions about the program, but it didn't get more specific than that, and we're talking about one small item.
You reported that Hill herself seemed to be confused. Tell us more about that.
So immediately after the vote, Hill interjected that she was unclear on what changes the board wanted, with only 2 weeks to figure it out. Sneed told her they'd, quote, address that after this meeting without elaborating. That led to this tense exchange.
We have a $2.1 billion budget. I do not have clarity on what exactly needs to be amended.
Dr. Hill.
I do not feel comfortable taking that direction outside of a board action.
So we will address whatever meetings there will be, not tonight, and you will get direction.
When Hill pressed, Sneed cut her off by banging her gavel and adjourning the meeting. Afterwards, Sneed suggested there could be a special called meeting between now and the May 12th regular meeting, which is the deadline the board has given Hill.
Yeah, that is quite a moment, with the board chair cutting off the superintendent with a gavel. What do you think this says about the board's relationship with the superintendent, Hill?
I think that's part of what makes this so surprising, because at least publicly, the board has been pretty supportive of Hill. And last night, board members seemed to be going to great lengths to not put the blame on Hill or her staff, even as they voted against her budget. Here's the board's vice chair, D. Rankin.
This motion that's before us is not about performance of our superintendent. It's not about performance of our staff. It's not about performance of our students, because we see the hard work has produced historic gains in student outcomes.
It felt like a real it's not you, it's me situation. CMS boasted really strong academic growth last year, and no sitting board member has disputed those results. If you go back to the last election, there had been some questions about whether the board might be overly deferential to Hill. That certainly wasn't the case last night, and there was real tension in the room after the vote.
Okay, so James, what happens next?
Well, that's a good question. Presumably there could be a special called meeting, like Sneed said, but otherwise the next regular board meeting is May 12th. That's the deadline the board has given Hill. That's going to be real tight, because state law requires districts to submit their budgets to the county by May 15th. After the meeting, Sneed downplayed any concerns and said a budget would be passed in short order.
Okay, that is WFAE's James Farrell. Thank you, James.
Thanks, Nick.
Big changes could be in the works for part of Uptown Charlotte. The new owner of a block along South Tryon laid out redevelopment plans in an interview with the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter. And the Ledger's Tony Macias spoke to our Marshall Terry about those plans for our segment, Bizworthy.
Where along South Tryon are we talking exactly, Tony?
The old two Wells Fargo Center complex. There's a plaza out front. It's in front of Mimosa Grill across the street from Lada Arcade. And a company called Riverside Investment and Development and Singerman Real Estate bought it. They would like to convert the 31-story office tower into a mix of residential units and a hotel. And then there's also a smaller office building that they say they want to renovate. It's a good sign for that area. You know, I think it also bodes well for the office market in Charlotte. We've seen some signs that that is maybe coming back to life a little bit. There's a lot of empty office space. And so the fact that you have someone like Riverside coming in, announcing these plans, and it's somebody that is actually doing some things and building some things, the Queensbridge Collective Project in South End, they're building two towers. I think it bodes well for the future of office space in Charlotte.
Staying in Uptown for a moment, the general manager of the Grand Bohemian Hotel says his guests are complaining about excessive street noise. I mean, it is uptown, right? What are they saying?
The general manager of the Grand Bohemian says that guests are complaining about excessive noise, about cars with loud mufflers, cars doing donuts, bar noises, emergency vehicles, and that it's really excessive. It's causing a problem. It's hurting his business. It's hurting tourism to the city, and he'd like something to be done about it. He was also joined by some residents of Uptown who said they're seeing the same things. We've seen some of these street takeovers in the Uptown area. They said they're working with the city to try to figure something out. The general manager of the hotel suggested maybe they could put in more cameras, maybe step up some enforcement, but they'd like to see it maybe not as loud in the middle of the night.
On to some news in our industry, media. The Charlotte Observer is looking for someone to lead the paper, and it appears the role combines the responsibilities of two top editors who just left. What's the job description for this new position, and what does it say about how the local media industry is changing?
McClatchy, which is the parent company of the Charlotte Observer, posted a job last week for the role of Charlotte editor, which it says is, quote, an audience-obsessed leader who can dramatically accelerate the newsroom's transformation. And this comes as a couple of the top editors, Raina Cash, who is the executive editor, and Taylor Batten, who has been with the Observer for more than 30 years, who is the managing editor, they are leaving. And so this new role sounds like it's combining those two. I think this is part of an ongoing consolidation that you're seeing in media, trying to cut back on expenses. You know, McClatchy has also been moving pretty heavily into artificial intelligence, using that to help out production. They say in this new role of the Charlotte editor, they want someone who has a, quote, enthusiasm for AI and emerging technologies. So I think it's just a sign of the times, consolidation and cost cutting.
Finally, Charlotte tech company Street Fair is shutting down its app and becoming a part of a San Francisco-based company. What did Street Fair do, and why this move?
Street Fair is a small company in Charlotte that used technology to connect neighbors with home repair services, like fixing your garage door or putting in drywall or gardening, those sorts of things. They said they're closing down their app and website on May 15th as they're merging with a San Francisco-based company called Thumbtack. And they say, look for them later this year. They're going to start a new service called Thumbtack Neighbors, which sounds like it's similar to what Street Fair did. This is sort of the normal evolution of technology companies that sort of build and grow and then sell. It sounds like it's a good outcome for Street Fair.
Okay, Tony, thank you.
Thanks, Marshall.
That's Tony Macia of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter. Support for Bizworthy comes from the Law Office of Robertson and Associates. And for Thursday, April 30th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.